Yeah, I think there's certain industries and certain verticals that really do care about security, right? If you're thinking about a large bank, right, they have some piece of software that's controlling how trillions of dollars of assets are being distributed. They're going to take things much more seriously, right? Or if we're putting software on a Navy ship that's going to control a weapon system, right? We're taking security very, very seriously. But when we're talking about other industry, right, what they care about most is that bottom line, right? How does a vulnerability in their software or how does an insecure supply chain affect their financial risk?
Welcome to another edition of Cloud Unfiltered. I'm your host, Michael Chenitz. And today we have our esteemed guest, Cole Kennedy. And Cole, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey, thanks for having me on the show. I am a founder and a CEO of a startup called TestifySec. We focus on ensuring the integrity of software supply chains within enterprises.
Yeah, so software supply chain is all about SBOM. That's all that matters, right? That's the important thing, right?
SBOM really does matter quite a bit. But, you know, there's an analogy I like to use, right? And imagine that your daughter is getting married and she wants this perfect wedding cake, right? The ingredients that go into that cake are only one factor of the quality of that cake that comes out on the other side, right? We also need to know, hey, did that baker, did they wash her hands? What did they set the oven temperature to, right? Where were these ingredients maybe sourced from? So there's a lot of different factors which come out to make that cake, right? And the issue is that we don't know what happens in that bakery unless we have some way to kind of observe that process and then verify that process. The same goes on with software, right? And where an SBOM is going to give you that list of ingredients, we really want to know, hey, did that undergo static analysis testing? Did that undergo two-party code review? These are the real things that really let us understand the risks of these software artifacts and kind of stop some of the attacks that we've been seeing going on.
You know, it's funny. I wrote a blog a little while back to talk about, I don't remember what it was, but it was to talk about SBOMs. And I kind of used a similar analogy, but I used like pharmaceutical. I said, you know, you look at the pharmaceutical stuff, or maybe I didn't, no, you know what? Actually, I didn't use pharmaceutical, it was ingredients. I said, you look at the ingredients, you're right. I used ingredients, but then there's a recall. How do you know what's in those things? So I used the recall part of that, you know, as kind of that analogy. You know, you know the ingredients, you're looking at the ingredients, but then there's some kind of recall. Now you have to chase down all these things. Now you have to verify. Now you have to, you know, look at where these things came from and how they were made, you know?
Yeah, it is more than like, if you look at what happened, I think it was like in the 80s or whatever, when that Tylenol scare where that medicine was altered, right?
Yep.
That wasn't an ingredient that was on the label, right? That was something that was inserted part of the manufacturing process. I think we can really drive parallels from that to one of the recent attacks, like the XZ attack, where some of those ingredients were inserted out of band, right? So an SBOM doesn't always capture all that stuff. You really need that observability of the software delivery lifecycle to understand some of that thing.
That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and not to mention, I mean, you know, even with an SBOM, there's four different ways, and even more really, that they kind of explain SBOMs. You know, there's different formats. We can't even agree on the format of an SBOM at this point. Although there is, you know, obviously there's some that are coming out on top, but you know, It's hard to communicate things when we have to agree on certain formats. I also think about like things like what do we define these things as? We're not all calling things. Every company is not calling things the same way. Like there needs to be better standards to like say this is this and this is this. And how do we communicate and talk the same language?
Oh, yeah, I agree. So if we think about DevOps, right? DevOps is always about improving that communication. You know, way back in the day, right, we may email an artifact and say, hey, go deploy this on a system, right? But today we define that process in YAML and Kubernetes manifest, right? So if we're talking about DevSecOps, we really need a way to improve that communication. And when we're talking about computers, right, and how computers improve communication, it means standardized, trusted APIs. So that's why our team's been spending a lot of time with the Intoto project and the CNCF, because we feel that this is a foundational API of DevSecOps. It is the future of how we communicate security events within the software delivery lifecycle.
So what's new in this area? I mean, what are we doing to improve this? And what are you guys doing?
So I think, you know, what we've done is we've defined this component of the DevOps cycle called a pipeline orchestrator and then a pipeline observer. So in your traditional CI/CD systems, what you see is only that pipeline orchestrator part, right? That's the part that takes your pipeline.yaml if you're using GitLab, or your action if you're using GitHub, and turns that into an action that's actually run on a machine, right? But it doesn't actually observe what happens. And this is where we find some of the issues, right? Because without that layer of observability, we can't ascertain exactly what happened. We just have to trust that the runner did what it's supposed to do. And I don't know, I've been writing code for a really long time, and my code generally doesn't do exactly what I think it's going to do, right? So there's those issues, and then there's attacks, right? So, but we found through our research and working with the CNCF, writing the software supply chain best practices paper, as well as the software factory reference architecture, that you need this additional component, right? You need this observability of what actually happens during each step of the software supply chain. And when you have that component, it solves a lot of these problems that we're talking about, because you can observe the inputs, the outputs, the action, and then the environment where all these steps take place. We actually codified some of this. We worked with NIST, our director of R&D, Frederick Kautz, as well as Santiago Torres of the Intoto project, worked with NIST to codify this into a document. It's NIST 800-204D. It's strategies for DevSec, Ops, and microservices environments. It's quite a mouthful, but if you look up 804D, you can find that document. It specifies exactly what makes up a supply chain and what we need to do to secure those supply chain, secure that supply chain.
I'm just impressed that you remember that number, like just like that. That's
yeah. But my job is to remember NIST documents and publications and reference articles and all that.
Yeah, no, that's pretty impressive. And Frederick has been on the show before. He's a friend of our show, definitely. So I was glad that he was working with you. Great guy too. So one of the things I think about often is, you know, like, where does this onus land? You know, because yes, the pipeline is one of these places, but then when you think of SBOMs, it's also the repos. It's also the, you know, all these other areas. And whose onus is it to do all of these tests and to kind of link these things together? So that's one of the things I think of often.
Yeah. So I think if you're talking about like open source, right, if it's a supported open source that you're paying for, that liability should lie on that person, right? But you're going to need to pay him for that. If you're an organization that's consuming open source, you should really be doing a lot of this yourself, right? I think when we just trust that things are going to be done right and built for us correctly, we run into some issues. And I think that's what we saw with the XE attack. I mean, Red Hat and SUSE, and some other package managers just pulled down that tarball, trusting it without checking to make sure everything in that tarball actually came from that source repository. And that caused some issues, right? And if this could happen in that type of environment, imagine what's happening in some of these private repos that might be maintained by, you know, a random contractor that's subcontracted three levels deep to take care of this project, right? So when we're an enterprise that's selling software to another organization, it's the liability. I mean, legal liability is one thing, right? But the ethical liability lies on that software producer to do the right thing and then make sure that the integrity of that artifact is there.
Yeah, it's interesting because something like XE is something that people just use all the time. So you're not even thinking about, you know, what is that, you know? What is that coming from? I'm just going to use that. And I'm not even thinking about it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Right. And it's one thing if you're a developer doing that, you're doing a hobby project. It's another thing if you're putting these libraries and then distribute them to millions of downstream users.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me a little bit about some of the struggles that we're having in the industry about, you know, getting people to consider this adoption, because honestly, as I said earlier, pre-call is that, you know, I was in cybersecurity for 20 years. And the one thing I've learned is that companies care about risk and they don't care about security, which is a big differentiator because risk says, what is the risk to me if this is exposed, you know, and if it's considered, you know, for some reason, a low risk, or that there's, you know, not that we don't want to put money into it, then they're not even going to consider the security aspect of that.
Yeah, I think there's certain industries and certain verticals that really do care about security, right? If you're thinking about a large bank, right, they have some piece of software that's controlling how trillions of dollars of assets are being distributed. They're going to take things much more seriously, right? Or if we're putting software on a Navy ship that's going to control a weapon system, right? We're taking security very, very seriously. But when we're talking about other industry, right, what they care about most is that bottom line, right? How does a vulnerability in their software or how does an insecure supply chain affect their financial risk? So I think we have a lot of work to do in the industry, right? Because some of the tools that we have around software supply chain security that actually mitigate risk, increase financial risk for the company, right? They take large projects to implement to actually show measurable risk over time. So I think as an industry, if we want to have more security, we got to do it in a way that's much easier for our users to implement. Otherwise, we're not reducing risk. We're increasing risk by increasing the complexity, having them, they have to hire more security personnel. They have to monitor more things, right? They have more things to go through, right? That's not helping them at all. So I think moving away from complexity as an industry is going to really help serve those customers that are so focused on security.
Yeah, and I agree on that in general. And I think that's why you're seeing a shift to even platform engineering is that, you know, people want to standardize more. They don't want to, you know, be beholden to all these, you know, stitching all these pieces of tech together. And the other thing is that the industry, unfortunately, has had a lot of layoffs. Yeah. And they don't have the people that they used to have to do all these things. So they have to find ways to make it simple. And the other thing I would mention is that, you know, for a product, especially something that works on the pipeline, to be successful, it has to have minimal impact in the way that things work. So if you have a product and it says, okay, now your pipeline is 100 times bigger and it has a lot more steps, that's an automatic no-go. But if it's just one little more step, then it's a checkpoint. That's something that you can show people. And that's something that makes it, hey, you have more security. And it's fairly easy to implement and there's really no downside. So I totally agree with you in that people are yearning right now for easier ways to do things. And if it is easier, then people will do it.
Yeah. And so we've done a couple of things here with some of our open source. First, we have a GitHub action that really makes it much easier to create some of these attestations, witness run action. GitLab just released something called GitLab Components, which is similar to what GitHub Actions are. We've also released one component for that. I have a blog article on the site about that right now. But that still, right, that requires you to retool some of your pipelines in order to get this to work. And there's ways to automate some of this, but really where I see the future is that this attestation generation technology should really be built into the CI platforms. It should be built into our security tooling. Right. If I'm going to run a scan on a piece of software, right, I would really love that scan tool to output a attestation telling me what it did and what that result is, right? And in a way that I can trust it, integrating with Sigstore or KMS or whatever. And that's one of the reasons why in the Antonio community, we've developed libraries that allow this to happen. And we've seen some adoption with that in some of the open source, where I think Docker now creates Intoto attestations when you do a Docker build. I think there's still a little work to do there. It's not perfect. If you use some of Anchor's tooling, right, those will create attestations as well. But they're not all the same, right? They're not standardized. So one of the things we're trying to do in the Intoto community is standardize a lot of that around the Go Witness library. So a lot of these open source tools, rather than having to build this functionality themselves, right, they can import this and then automatically get these signed attestations based upon the output of their tools.
Yeah, let's talk about a little bit about attestation. So we had Frederick on a little while back, and it was probably maybe a year or two ago, talking a little bit about Intoto. But, you know, I'm sure a lot has changed. And I think some of the concepts back then, and I don't know if they are the concepts now, were things like, you know, obviously looking at how they were compiled and all these different elements. And then also comparing, I think one of the future things was like comparing what are different companies getting? If it's the same tool, are they getting a similar result? Are they getting so I don't know where it is now. I'd love to hear a little bit more about first, for my listeners that don't really know, what is attestation? and what makes it up. And it's really complex, by the way, for my listeners that are out there. What are some of the main like considerations and benefits of it?
Well, let's go back to our analogy about that wedding, right? Yeah, so imagine then instead of just trusting that baker to deliver the cake that you wrote the instructions for, you hire a trusted observer. Let's say you hire your brother to go there and sit in the kitchen. And then every time that baker has a step to complete that process of making the cake, he writes down what happened, right? Writes down, you know, he looks around, takes a picture of the room, and then writes out on a piece of paper, signs it, and then sticks it in an envelope. And he keeps doing this every time the baker does something, every time someone steps in the room, anytime there's any action making that cake, they do that. So now when this cake is delivered, you don't have to trust that baker anymore, right? As long as you trust whoever signed that envelope, which, right, you know your brother's signature, so you open up that envelope, and then you can read every single step that happened. So you don't have to have implicit trust over that baker anymore. You know that cake was made the correct way because you have this external trust, right? You have these signed attestations about the process that was completed. So the same thing in software, right? Except we're not collecting information about how much flour was used, right? We're doing things like, hey, what was the AWS metadata that was attached to this instance that we verified when this build was made? So now I can say that, yeah, my build actually happened on AWS GovCloud, right? On an instance that I know I own. The machine is this AMI, and I know it was in this state when the software was built, right? So if we do this and we layer this around for all the steps in the software supply chain and verifiably link them by their inputs and their outputs, it gives us a very good idea of what happened in that process in a way that we can automate the evaluation of it. So we know that that artifact is compliant. We know it was made the way it was supposed to be made.
So how do you determine what pieces are relevant and what pieces are too kind of, I don't want to say, you know, too strict, like, you know, you might have a piece that changes a lot, and even though, you know, it might throw off some kind of result, you know. So how do you figure out like what's really important and what's, you know, just a piece of information that you need?
Well, the nice things about the attestations that we create in the Intoto project is they're all on a schema, right? So if I'm collecting a variable that I know should stay constant from pipeline run to pipeline run, let's say the pipeline URL, or not the pipeline, but the project URL, right? Or the individual who made the commit. Right, I can lock those down. I can do the analysis between pipeline run to see what changes and what shouldn't change. So there's a lot we can do within this policy generation to make it very automatic. And we're incorporating some of this stuff in some of our commercial products. You may see some of it in our open source, but I don't think users should actually have to write policies. I think when you have this really detailed wide telemetry that we're collecting from the software supply chain, it gives us a lot of insights on the types of policies that we should be creating for the user. I bring it back, sticky ports, you know, when you plug in your Ethernet cable into a port and it locks it to that MAC address. So we can do the same thing for a software supply chain, right? We do a pipeline run, we lock those values in place. And that way we know if anything comes in and tampers with that process, we can get a policy violation.
No, that totally makes sense. I think of all the variables that you need to know, and it just boggles my mind, you know, because first of all, it's always changing. Second of all, there's different things, like you could use a different compiler than somebody else. You could use different, you know, so you'll always get slightly different results and different, you know, if I think of it as like a hash, you would get a different hash each time. So, you know, how do you kind of correlate those things?
Yeah, and that's one of the big problems that actually brought us to Intoto, because we were using some of the pipeline templating tools within GitLab to do this. But our customer, and this is before we started Testify, our customer was actually developing for embedded system. I don't know if you've ever like compiled anything on an embedded system, but trying to have your CISO write the pipeline for your embedded system compilation process, it is a non-starter, right? So what this led them to do was allow the developers to have control over certain steps of their process. But as you can see, right, if you don't have verifiability over this, you can't link them all together. So if you're going to these high compliance environments, that can also be a non-starter. So you have these issues where when you insert this pipeline observer, a lot of these problems kind of melt away.
I'm just thinking out loud here, but is there a way to, you know, start out with something that's better. Like, to like, yes, you're verifying things as you build it, but maybe there's certain elements that you can start out with that are already verified. So you know that when you start that, you're already starting out with a good base, you know? So I don't know if that's part of what you do, but I was just thinking out loud here.
Like,
maybe that's like, there's verified elements. Like, you're already starting out with, I don't know, you know, certain pieces, certain APIs, certain, you know, so that there's verified components of it. But maybe that's just part of the same thing. Maybe that's this, you know, you're verifying those elements. So maybe there's not really a way to do that.
Yeah. So when you do with Witness and Intoto, right, the verification process is completely decoupled. So you can have that verification step anywhere you want.
That's cool.
That really helps out with a lot of that, right? So if you want your first step of your pipeline, you can have it verify that commit came from someone inside your company, right? And then you mitigate some of the problems with remote code execution on your runners. I think we need to do that, right? I think if you look at some of the guidance, some of the stuff that we're doing within OpenSSF and CNCF around this, it says, okay, at every single stage of the software supply chain, right? Every single step, we need to verify all the previous steps. So we're a little bit, we're working towards that with the Intoto specification. We're not quite there yet. But yeah, there's definitely some things that we want to do to improve that process.
Yeah. I mean, that's really amazing. And I, you know, I work for Cisco, so we're all about security. And, you know, I understand the supply chain because I'm in it, you know?
Yeah.
But I still think that the big thing is the standards around it. And I love projects like Intoto because, you know, we have to be able to get to that point where X is X and Y is Y and all these kinds of things.
You know? Go bring it back to the wedding cake analogy one more time, right? We hired our brother to write down all the instructions, and maybe that wasn't the best choice because our brother, you know, they might have their own language that only we understand, right? But now if you write those steps down in some sort of a schema, now you can pass a schema along to your customers, to your suppliers, and now you have a common language that you can verify all these artifacts on. Just kind of like with containers, right? Now we had this great API that allows us to deploy the software in a standardized way, right? So we need an API that allows us to verify software in a standardized way as well. And this is what Intoto is. And that is what the attestation working group is working on, is creating these little atoms, right, of specific information of, hey, what does it look like when I want to verify that a code review happened, right? What does it look like when I want to verify that this build took place on, you know, some trusted hardware, right? So there's a lot of work going on there to define these standards and how we pass this information around.
And when you're building these kind of pieces or components, are they components, first of all? And are they, what happens when, you know, obviously this world is changing super fast. There's, you know, there's new programming languages, there's new, you know, every single day somebody creates something new. So how do you, is it modularized, and how do you keep up with all of this?
Well, in a basic sense, right, what we're recording is the inputs, the outputs, and then some of the environment, right? So inputs and outputs, those are really the key components of what we're recording because they link all the steps together. And those are just hashes, right? Those are just, we're calculating hashes over the bytes that go in, the bytes that go out. And that really gives us the full integrity over the supply chain. So it doesn't matter whether you're using containers, whether you're embedded systems, or you know, even punch cards, right? You can still use that process that we defined in NIST 800-204D to provide that integrity. Now, where things do change, right? If let's say we have a scan tool that outputs a specific format, right? That's where, you know, we're going to have to change over time, and those APIs will mature and evolve. Kind of like we saw with Kubernetes, right? The Kubernetes API that existed 5 years ago is much different than it exists today. But that's just because we've grown and we've decided that, hey, we need some extra things, and there's some things we don't need so much.
Yeah. So what types of, I mean, is there a plethora of scan tools that you accept? Is there, you know, is it, what goes into that?
Yeah. Anyway, anything that produces an output. So one of the things is a lot of these scan tools have started outputting SARIF, documents. I think that's how you pronounce it. I apologize if that's wrong, but because they integrate with a lot of the stuff that tooling that GitHub has. So we can actually generate attestations on these SARFs documents, and then we can store those in Arcavista and actually create policy on that schema to say, hey, you know, this, I don't want to let anything in my cluster that had a high scan result on it. So anything that produces an output, we can create an attestation on and then evaluate that.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that would be interesting for my listeners is, you know, when should people really start to be considering using tools like this? Obviously, it's when you're, you know, you have a lot of components and you have to think about it. Is it all the time? Is it the single developer? Is it the enterprise? When do you start? Is it when you're building an app? You know, when should you start to think about this?
Well, I think you should look at, you know, if I look at what's running in production right now and you can't answer the question, can I trace this back to the development process and the security process for this artifact? And if you can't do that today with the tooling you have in place, I say, hey, go look at Intoto, go look at Witness, go look at Arcavista, see if that fits your needs. If it doesn't, open an issue, let us know. And, you know, we can help bring it more towards what your goals are.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because depending on the, if you're an enterprise that's been around for a while, you may have very interesting tooling because you still may have things like AS400s and you still might run things like Fortran and you still might run things and you might be connected to other things that are containerized and other things. So how do you start to look at things that might have this hybrid kind of environment too and track that kind of supply chain?
Yeah, like I said before, like we're not tied to any specific technology, right? So Witness, you know, you can use some of the integrations that we have, but really it's a CLI tool that wraps any command. It's multi-architecture, right? It's a pure-written, pure-go. So even if you are running that AS400 and compiling that AS400 code, you can capture attestations about that process of Witness as along with your microservice code that's modern. And this all goes into one central repository where you can correlate all the supply chain data in one place, right? So I think having this layer of security on the CI system really helps with this, right? Because now you're not locked into one CI system. And with large enterprises, we all know they still have a Jenkins server that's running under a developer's desk that's been running for 15 years that nobody wants to touch, right? So instrument that Jenkins server with some of the trusted telemetry capture that you can get with Witness, as long and use these plugins that we have for GitLab and GitHub, and then all this data goes into one central place that really gives your organization full visibility over the risks of your artifacts and maybe where we need to have a little more effort to shore up some of the security. But the first thing is, hey, let's capture that telemetry that and get it in one place. Now we have visibility over what we need to start working on to solve some of these issues. And that's exactly what you can do with Witness and Arcavista.
So for my listeners, what about, you know, this makes sense when you're working, you know, in your company and you have your own artifacts and you're kind of capturing that stuff. But is there the concept of sharing? Is there a repo that you can share and say, hey, I know this company has already tested this and I know that this is okay to pull down. So can you explain if there's something like that or if that's even a thought?
Yeah, so it's something that we're working on for some more of our commercial products. We do have a public instance of Arcavista, but there's security around it. So anything you push there is going to be available to anybody else that wants it. So if you're an open source developer, like this is a really great place that you can start pushing attestations to and sharing these things with no cost or infrastructure to yourself. And then if you're an enterprise, right, one of the great things about the data model of Intoto is these things are just JSON objects. So you can burn them to a CD and give them to your customer. You can put them in an S3 bucket, whatever you want. And then they have all that data that they can write their own policies against or use your policies that you've developed to verify that, hey, yeah, the process that we expected for these artifacts, you know, it happened, right? And we have the proof for it.
So I have a segment of my show that I call Buzzworthy or Buzzworthless. Then it's about terms that we use in the industry. And I'm going to go security because that's what we're talking about. And I just ask whether, I just say the term and then ask whether it's buzzworthy or buzzworthless. So
based buzzworthy on your view. Or buzzworthless.
Yes.
Okay, I got you.
So, you know, and some of these terms are just overused and then they lose their meaning and things like that. And some of them are great. But let's start with like shift left.
Buzzworthy.
And why? Just to give your opinion.
Yeah, so I think we need to shift left and also communicate right. Right, developers need the tooling to generate data about what they do, but the CISOs, right, need tooling to understand what the developers do. We need to improve that communication there.
Okay, and I'm going to use another one, and I think I know your answer to this, but SBOM.
Man, this is tough. You're putting me on the spot. I'm going to see Alan next week. I'm going to reserve that black and white comparison. I think SBOMs are really important, but SBOMs are only as good as much as you can trust them, right? So we need some sort of basis of trust, and we need to verifiably link these SBOMs to the artifact. It's something that we're working on in the SBOMit project in the OpenSSL.
Awesome. Well, any other last words of wisdom before we end this show?
Hey, you need to start generating attestations for your software supply chain today. It's really easy. Go to witness.dev. There's a getting started guide. We have a GitHub action and we have a GitLab component that makes it super easy. It's all free open source CNCF software.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. You know, I'll leave some notes about where people can find all these things within the show notes. And thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right.